Pretty exciting stuff, isn't it? To hear and to reflect on these 10 words that the Lord gave to Moses and to the community. And for most of us, we don't need to really think about the commandments. You know, whether any of you have been coveting a neighbor's donkey lately, I don't know, maybe you have. Whether you've been deciding to not kill someone because it's one of the commandments, or to not steal something, or to not commit adultery. Most of the time, the commandments simply are there as the structures of our lives. We don't really need them to prevent us from doing the wrong thing. But I think what is much better is to understand what they are about in the first place. First, the context. So they're given to, not just to Moses, but to the whole community of Israel. And they go back to Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai, it's Mount Sinai, because that was where the Lord encountered Moses. That was where he was revealed in the burning bush, and he told his special, precious name to Moses, a name that we really can't utter because it's only God himself who's able to utter this truth of who he is. But the Lord said to Moses, I have seen my people suffering. I have heard their cry of distress, their cry of lament. And I will come and I will set my people free. And over the course of the next few months and years, indeed, the Lord does help Moses and the whole people to be delivered. And so they've just escaped from the bond of slavery. They've just escaped from the land of Egypt, and they've now made their way into the wilderness, and they've journeyed across the Sinai Peninsula to the other side where Mount Sinai is. And there, as the Lord gathers all of his people, all of his chosen ones, all of his precious ones, and he wants to instruct them with these words. Now note, the word commandment doesn't actually appear in the text. What the Lord addresses are these 10 words spoken to this community. And in the Hebrew, it's only 171 words in total. So even though we've seen those images of kind of Moses being burdened down by these huge stone tablets, in reality, a stone tablet just slightly larger than your hand. The text says it's written on front and back. So all it would have taken is just that small stone tablet that he could have easily held in his hand to contain those 171 words that were able then to be remembered, able to be memorized, able to be repeated, to form that basis. And the Lord is addressing this as a covenant, as an invitation into relationship, an invitation into life. They're not there simply as these horrible rules and regulations that sit over the top of us. They're there as the foundation of our life. They're there to provide a source of how we are to enter into a relationship. And that opening line is crucial. That who is the person making this covenant? I am the Lord your God, who brought you from Egypt, from the land of slavery. He is the one who has set us free. And so he has a right to enter into this relationship with us, because he's longing for us to experience this freedom. He's longing for us to experience the goodness of the Lord. And then we're told, you know, don't make any idols. And how does that make any sense? Because at the very beginning of Scripture, at the very beginning of the book of Genesis, when we are created, we're told in Genesis 1, 26 and 27, that we are made in the very image and likeness of God. So if you want any idols, if you want any reminders of the presence of God, all you need to do is look around. Look around in the church today, because gathered here around us are image bearers of God. And so we don't need to create any other idols, because we're already the living representations, the living images of God and God's presence within the world. So he said, you don't need to create idols, because look around. We are already the very presence of God. We're meant to mirror into creation the goodness of God in our acts of worship, in all that we do, in our works of creativity, all the things that we use our hands for, that we're meant to bear witness to the goodness of God. And the next commandment is also one that is often misunderstood and misrepresented. And part of that is that we've translated it badly, beginning with the English translations. Because it's not taking the name of the Lord in vain. It's not a commandment against cursing or cussing. It's a commandment about bearing the name. That's what the Hebrew word means, in the sense of carrying the name of the Lord. And we know that just in a few chapters later, there's going to be the description about the worship of God, how to build the temple, how to decorate it, what the high priest should wear, very detailed descriptions about the clothing that he should wear. And there was a turban that he would wear on his head and a breastplate that would have the 12 stones of representing the 12 tribes of Israel. And each of the stones would bear the name of one of the tribes. But on the center of his forehead, there was going to be a stone that had the Hebrew Lamda Yahweh, because Lamda is the sense of possession. This is the property of, this is the object of. You know, if you write on one of your books, Ex Libris, from the library of so-and-so, it's a representation. Lamda carries all of that. And so the high priest bore the name of God on his head. And so when he walked into the temple, he was a representative bearing the name of the Lord. And so it's an invitation to worship well, to remember that you are the image bearers of God, that you are already called into this covenant relationship, that you are invited into this place of freedom and goodness with God. This is not just about a whole bunch of rules and regulations that are imposed, but about an invitation into the very relationship and friendship with God. And so to be an image bearer represents, that will naturally calls us into that place of worship. And how do we worship? Then the next commandments will invite us into that, into the appropriate place of rest, into that appropriate place of surrender. There's this natural internal kind of logic and beauty that is present in these teachings and in these instructions and ways of life that we're invited into. But the problem was, over the course of years, as the people failed to know God, as they failed to live in that friendship with God, all of these systems of rules and regulations began to simply be imposed, as so often they have been within the Catholic Church as well. Rather than these life-giving invitations into deeper friendship and relationship with God, they become these things that are imposed and ways that we can judge and condemn and separate people. And so when Jesus comes into the temple on this Passover day, he is realizing that all of this system that was meant to provide freedom and liberation, that was meant to remind people of the beauty and glory of God, that was meant to invite them more deeply into their own acts of worship, all of that had been lost, and all of these systems and structures had been put in place to carry the weight that they were never intended to carry. And so he braids a cord and drives all of the animals, drives out of the money sellers, the money changers, and overthrows their tables. Because there are times in our lives when we need to be set free from all of those things that no longer serve us. Those courses of action, those ways of thinking, those patterns of behavior that no longer set us into that place of freedom. And so Lent is meant to be this time of being cleansed and freed and renewed, of being reminded that we indeed once were slaves to sin, that we were once not able to be free in our worship. But the Lord, with mighty hand and outstretched arm, has set us free from the slavery of Egypt, has set us free to worship him well. But whenever we begin to attract all of those things, all of those burdens that weigh us down, there comes time that we need all of that just thrown open and liberated and set free. And so the cleansing of the Lord is an invitation for us to remember who we are, that we are the image bearers of God, that we are the property of the Lord, that we are meant to worship well, we are meant to serve the Lord with all of our hearts, with all of our lives, and that there, whenever there are things that we recognize within our lives that no longer let us be the children of God, that no longer let us worship well, then all of that needs to be let go. All of that needs to be cleansed from our lives. So indeed, during these days of Lent, let's take the invitation and really reflect upon those areas, those things in our lives that we've added and accumulated, things that don't allow us to be free, and to surrender them so that we can indeed worship the Lord freely and wholly, and to offer ourselves in sacrifice to the Lord.